nurses into a medical team that worked for 3 weeks, arguing, consoling, and burying. Once Abner cried in frustration, "John, why do these stubborn people insist upon plunging into the surf when they know it kills them?" And Whipple replied in exhaustion, "We are misled because we call the fever measles. In these unprotected people it is something much worse. Abner, you have never known such a fever." Nevertheless, the little missionary pleaded with his patients, "If you go into the water, you will die." "I want to die, Makuahale," they replied. Jerusha and Amanda saved many lives by forcing their way into huts, where they took away babies without even asking, for they knew that if the fevered infants continued their piteous moaning, their parents would carry them to the sea. By wrapping the children in blankets and dosing them with syrup of squill, thus encouraging the fever to erupt through skin sores as it should, the women rescued the children. But with adults, neither logic nor force could keep them from the sea, and throughout Lahaina, one Hawaiian in three perished. In time, the measles reached even Malama's walled-in compound, where it struck Keoki, who welcomed it, and his baby son, Kilolo. Here, the Hales found the shivering Kanakoa family, and Jerusha said promptly, "I will take the little boy home with me." And there must have been a great devil near Abner's heart, for when his wife had the dying child in her arms, he stopped her and asked, "Would it not be better if that child of sin..." Jerusha looked steadily at her husband and said, "I will take the boy. This is what we have been preaching about in the new laws, all the children." And she carried the whimpering child and placed him among her own. When she was gone, Abner found that Keoki had escaped to the seashore, where he dug a shallow grave into which salt water seeped, and before Abner could overtake him, he had plunged in, finding relief at last. Abner, limping along the reef, came upon him and cried, "Keoki, if you do that, you will surely die." "I shall die," the tall ali'i shivered. Compassionately, Abner pleaded, "Come back, and I will wrap you in blankets." "I shall die," Keoki insisted. "There is no evil that God cannot forgive," Abner assured the quaking man. "Your God no longer exists," Keoki mumbled from his cold grave. "I shall die and renew my life in the waters of Kani." Abner was horrified by these words and pleaded, "Keoki, even in death, do not use such blasphemy against the God who loves you." "Your God brings us only pestilence," the shivering man replied. "I am going to pray for you, Keoki." "It's too late now. You never wanted me in your church." And the fever-racked ali'i splashed his face with water. "Keoki," Abner pleaded, "you are dying. Pray with me for your immortal soul." "Kane will protect me," the stricken young man insisted. "Oh, no, no," Abner cried, but he felt a strong hand take his arm and pull him from the grave. It was one-eyed Kilolo who said, "You must leave my son alone with his God." "No," Abner shouted passionately. "Keoki, will you pray with me?" "I am beginning a dark journey," the sick man replied feebly. "I have told Kane of my coming. No other prayers are necessary." The incoming tide brought fresh and colder waters into the grave, and at that moment Abner leaped into the shallow pit and grasped his old friend by the hands. "Keoki, do not die in darkness, my dearest brother." But the ali'i drew away from Abner and hid his parched face with his forearms. "Take him away," the young man cried hoarsely. "I will die with my own God." And Kilolo dragged Abner from the grave. When the pestilence was ended, Abner and Jerusha brought the baby Kilolo, now healthy and smiling, back to the palace, where Noilani took the child and studied it dispassionately. This one will be the last of the Ali'i, she predicted sadly. But it may be better that way. Another pestilence, and we will all be gone. Quietly, Abner said, Noilani, you are aware that Jerusha and I love you above all others. You are precious to God. Will you return to his church? The tall, gracious young woman listened attentively to these contrite words, and for herself was inclined to accept them, for she had never taken the kahunas seriously. But when she thought of her dead brother, her resolve was hardened, and she replied with bitterness, If you had shown Keoki half the charity you now show me, he would not be dead. And it was coldly apparent that she would never return to the church, at least not to Abner Hale's church. One day in early 1833, after John Whipple had recovered from his exhaustion due to the pestilence, he was accosted by a sailor who asked, You, Doc Whipple?
I am, John said.
I was directed to hand you this personally, the sailor explained.
Where are you from? The doctor asked.
Carthaginian. We're in Honolulu. Eagerly, yet with apprehension, Whipple opened the letter, which said simply, Dear Dr. Whipple, you have good sense. Can you get Abner and Jerusha Hale out of Lahaina for a week? I intend to build them a house. Your trusted friend, Rafer Hawksworth.
Tell your captain yes, Whipple said.
When can he arrive? The sailor inquired.
Next Monday.
He will be here. So Whipple fabricated an intricate plot whereby Abner was called to what the missionaries called a protracted meeting at Wailuku, where long ago he had tended Urania Hewlett at her death. To Abner's surprise, the Whipple said, Amanda and I need a rest. We will join you for holiday.
The children? Jerusha asked, frightened, for she had never left them during a single night since Micah's birth.
Mrs. Janders will care for the children, John insisted. And although both Abner and Jerusha thought it perilous to risk their offspring to a woman who allowed Hawaiians to nurse her babies, they at last consented, and the four who had known one another so well aboard the Thetis began their pleasant hike to Wailuku. But when they reached the summit of the pass that divided the two halves of the island, John Whipple stopped and stared sadly back at the additional valleys that had been depopulated by the measles and said, Abner, somehow we've got to get a virile new people into these islands, because if dying Hawaiians were able to marry strong newcomers...
Whom could you get? Abner asked, mopping his forehead.
I used to think other Polynesians would do, Whipple replied. But recently I've changed my mind. It'll have to be Javanese, a totally new bloodstream. As he paused, he idly compared the parched leeward areas he had just left with the green windward area they were approaching.
Curious, he mused.
What is? Abner asked. I was looking at the two halves of this island, Whipple replied. The rain falls over here where it isn't needed, but it never falls on our side where the big fields lie barren.
Abner, he cried with positive delight, why couldn't a man bring the useless rain over to where it's needed?
Do you seek to correct God's handiwork? Abner snorted.
In such matters, yes, John replied.
How could you bring rain through a mountain? Abner challenged.
I don't know, Whipple mused. But he kept staring at the contrast between rainy windward and parched leeward.
They were not long on their journey before the Carthaginian hove into Lahaina Roads and Captain Rafer Hawksworth strode ashore. One-eyed Kilolo and a band of able policemen met the fiery whaler at the pier and leveled 6 guns at his chest.
Displace Kapu for you, Kapena. We know aloha for you, you damn hell, the old Ali'i warned in his best pigeon.
Hawksworth, brushing aside the guns, announced, I come only to build a house.
No girls on the ship, Kilolo said sternly.
I want no girls, Hawksworth assured him, striding briskly up to the mission house. To his following sailors, he said, Get every movable thing out of that house, and be careful.
The removal took only a few minutes, and when Hawksworth saw how pitifully little the Hales had, their only substantial furniture being the chairs and tables he had provided them, he held his big right hand over his mouth, for he was biting his lip with incredulity.
Cover it up, he said, and when this was carefully done, he applied a match to the old grass house, and in a moment it blazed into the air with its burden of insects and memories. When the ground was cleared, he said, Dig. The cellar was broad and deep. It would be cool in the blazing hot summers at Lahaina, and when it was done, Captain Hawksworth lined it with building stones hewn from coral, and these he continued some distance above the earth, so that when he started to erect the house itself, it had a solid foundation. Now he ordered his sailors to bring him the corner posts, each numbered, and he began the fascinating task of reassembling the house exactly as it had been when standing on the wharf in Boston. In 3 days, the job was well launched and obviously on its way to success. And it was while lounging in the offices of Janders and Whipple that Captain Hawksworth, having told Pupali and all his women to go to hell and leave him alone, heard the story of Keoki Kanakoa and his sister Noelani. You mean that tall, handsome girl I saw skimming naked past my ship one day on a surfboard? He asked quizzically. Yes, all this happened to her, Janders said gloomily. Why, hell, Hawksworth growled. She's the best-looking girl the island's ever produced. You mean she's out there in that grass shack, alone?
She has the usual women in waiting, Janders explained.
I know, Hawksworth said contemptuously, making huge circles with his hands to indicate the women who usually attach themselves to the Ali'i. I mean, she's just there?
Yes.
That's a hell of a way to live, he boomed. Just because she got mixed up with a lot of crazy nonsense. Janders, I'm going out there.
I wouldn't, the older man said. They don't remember you well in this town.
To hell with memories, Hawksworth cried, slamming his big fist onto the arm of his chair. I'm thinking of staying in Honolulu, Janders. Sail my ship to Canton in the China trade. Maybe build a couple of ships. Could I get cargoes here?
If your charges are low enough, Janders replied cautiously, I've got a lot of skins I'd like to get to China.
I think you'll get 'em there, Hawksworth said. And he strode out of the office and along the main road to the grass palace of the Ali'i. At his approach, guards ran to inform Kilolo, but before the old man could prevent Hawksworth from doing so, the bold captain had bowed graciously, shoved open the gate, and marched into the grass palace where he found Noelani.
Ma'am, he said, extending his big right paw, I've been wanting to meet you ever since I saw you riding naked past my ship. That must have been 13 years ago. You were a dazzling beauty in those days, ma'am. You're lovelier now.
Have you come to find someone else to sell? Noelani asked coldly.
No, ma'am. I've come to find me a wife, and I feel in my bones that you're the one.
Noelani started to reply to this abrupt assertion, but before she could do so, Hawksworth thrust upon her a bolt of choice Canton silk and a flood of words.
Ma'am, I suppose you know why I came back to Lahaina. My actions last time have preyed upon my conscience, and I deplored seeing an American man and woman living as those two did. If I offended you on my earlier visit, I now apologize. But with that out of the way, ma'am, I want to tell you that I propose running my ship henceforth in the China trade. I've bought a house in Honolulu, and for some time I've been looking for a wife.
Why did you not find a wife in Boston? Noelani asked coldly.
Tell you the truth, ma'am, Hawksworth replied.
But at this moment, Kelolo rushed up with some guards and burst into the room to save the princess. But she in turn dismissed her father and said that she wished to talk with the captain. Truth is, he continued, as if there had been no interruption, striding back and forth before the doorway leading to the garden, I proposed once to one of those peaches and white linen women of Boston, and I failed to win her. Since then, I've come to prefer the lustier women of the islands.
Where is Iliki? The L.E.E. asked.
I hope she's in good hands, Hawksworth said bluntly. Where would she be if she were here? The question caused Noelani to reflect, and to gain time she asked,
When will the house be finished?
In 2 days, ma'am, and that's why I think it important that you dine with me tonight aboard ship. I want you to see your quarters, in case you should ever decide to join me on one of the trips to Canton. The sound of this word, this distant city from which had come her clothes and her furniture, and which she had never expected to see, nor had she any reason to see it, so captivated Noelani that she betrayed her excitement, whereupon Hawksworth said bluntly,
Noelani, you've had a bad time here, caught up in things of which you were no part. Why not leave it all? It's a sad, messy business that you will never conquer. I offer you a wild, exciting life.
I have a son, you know, the proud woman said tentatively. Bring him with you. I've always wanted a tyke of my own aboard ship.
He belongs to the people, she hesitated.
Then leave him with the people, he said firmly. And before she could protest, he had caught her by the hand and drawn her to him, kissing her harshly upon the mouth and pulling at her garments.
Please, she whispered. Go to the door and tell the women to guard it. You're entertaining your husband-to-be.
She pushed him away, stood solemnly before him, and asked, Could you forget that I was once married to...
Noelani, he chided. How many of the girls of this village have I kept in my cabin? That's also past. Now I need a wife.
I meant that it was my brother who...
He pondered this question for a moment, then laughed again and said reassuringly, With me, each day that dawns begins a new year. I have no memories.
The tall captain's words were warm in her ear, the kind of bold, sweet words an Ali'i liked, and she thought, This Kapena is much like an Ali'i. He is tall, eager to fight, and he is the leader of his men. He is tired of running after waterfront women. He owns an important ship, and he was willing to take my son as his own. He is not pious, but I think he is honest. The day of the Hawaiian is dead, but the years of the white man are upon us.
To Hawksworth, she said quietly, I will go with you to the ship.
He kissed her again and felt her wealth of hair cascading upon his hands, and it aroused him, as the kisses of dark island girls had always done, and he whispered, Tell the women to guard the door. But she refused and said, Not in this room. It is a center of the old ways. I will go with you to your ship. And the town of Lahaina was astonished to see Captain Hawksworth and Noelani, the Ali'i Nui, walking down the dusty road beneath the palm trees, talking idly as if they were lovers. But they were more astonished when the tall girl, marvelously beautiful now that she was seeing daylight again, climbed into the captain's rowboat and went out to the Carthaginian, where she stayed till dawn. And when at parting she looked at the handsome, well-kept cabin which was to be hers, she thought, He is a real man, and I will be faithful to him. I will eat his food to please him. I will dress as he prefers so that other men shall look at him and say, Kapena is the lucky one. I will never say no to him. And then a soft smile came to her face, as it would later come to the 1,000 Hawaiian girls who would marry Americans. for I know that with my own words I can win him to a gentler life. Noilani saw Captain Hawksworth on each of the next 2 days, and on the last day of his visit to Lahaina, while his men were dragging a complete set of furniture from the Carthaginian to the new mission house, she was alone in the grass palace, wrapping in tepa cloth 2 heavy thigh bones. One Keoki had given her before his death, and the other she had received directly for herself. Taking the bundles in her arms, she went out to her father's small house and said to him, "Kilolo, my beloved father, I am leaving Lahaina, and I dare not take these oppressive gifts with me. You must return them to their grave. We cannot any longer live with such memorials haunting us." Reverently, he accepted the 2 great thigh bones, placing them tenderly on the earth before him. "Are you determined to go to Honolulu with the American?" he asked. "Yes, I am seeking a new life." "May it be a good one," he said gently through his broken and lisping lips. He did not rise to bid her goodbye, for although he understood the pressures which were forcing her to act as she did, he could not condone them, and he was certain that she was rejecting the only true vocation and happiness she would know on earth. "May the goddess Pele," he began, but she hushed his wish, unable to bear any further invocations. Yet on her part she said, "May the gods be good to you, Kilolo. May the long canoe ride swiftly until the rainbow comes for your departure." She studied his worn old figure with its circular scars about the face and its gaping eye socket, and then she left to board the ship. But when she reached the pier, the sailors told her, "The Kapena is not aboard yet," and they directed her to the mission house, where, looking into the bright new room, she saw her intended husband sitting on a kitchen chair turned backward, its arched back under his chin, and he staring moodily at the floor. And as she watched, he rose and carried the chair with him, and set it down 3 or 4 times with great violence, making the entire house shudder with his fury. And for some minutes he stood there, pounding the chair into the floor and holding his head down, with his eyes closed and knots standing out on his forehead in dark passion. And she recalled his earlier words and thought, "He can boast that he has no memories, but I am pleased that he has. I thought he remembered only trivial things like selling iliki." And after he had thrashed the chair into the floor 12 more times, to control himself from kicking the entire house into splinters, he carefully returned it to its place, gave the small wooden room 1 last lingering look, and came out into the bright sunlight. "We'll go," he said. And villagers who had heard of the impending marriage followed them to the pier, where they watched as the big captain caught Noilani in his arms and lifted her into the longboat. On the way home from Wailuku, John Whipple and his wife, as soon as they reached the summit of the trail, began gazing into the distance so markedly that Abner finally asked, "What are you looking for?" "A great surprise," John explained mysteriously.